Health Policy and Public Affairs to order on this day of January 29th,
wow.
2007. We're almost done with January.
Time flies when you're having fun.
The sponsor of the bill, SJR 9, is not here. First, before we go any further, we have planned to be in at Mount Hill Community College this Friday,
mm-hmm.
and it's extremely important for me to know who can't be there, and because we may not have a quorum, and so just let committee staff know.
I'll be there.
Okay, I'll be there.
I am participating in a documentary with Oregon Public Broadcasting, and the date's been on my calendar for a while, so I'll miss the meeting.
Okay. All right, so we'll just
I'll be there.
You'll be there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, it's at 10 o'clock, is that correct?
Yeah.
And directions will be forthcoming.
Okay.
Because the author or the sponsor, chief sponsor of SJR 9 isn't here yet, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 340, and I would like to call myself to the dais. You do have a nice chair, madam. She's going to call you. Did you answer? Did you answer yourself?
Yes.
Okay.
And she said yes. She was serious.
Good morning, committee. I'm Senator Lori Moniz Anderson from Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview, and I'm here today to talk about cancer and about Senate Bill 340. Skin cancer is the most common of all cancer types, and melanoma, as it is called, is one of the most common cancers among young adults. More than a million skin cancers are diagnosed in the U.S. The good news is that you can protect yourself, or if you diagnose it early enough, you can be treated effectively. Most skin cancers are caused by too much exposure to ultraviolet light, or UV rays, and much of this exposure comes from the sun. But some can come from man-made sources, such as tanning beds. And that's why Senate Bill 340 is before you today. Senate Bill 340 prohibits the use of tanning beds by anyone under the age of 15. Most skin damage from the sun comes or occurs before the age of 18. And according to the University of Texas Anderson Cancer Society, many youth will total 50 to 80% of their lifetime sun exposure during childhood. And research already shows that blistering sunburns and overexposure during childhood greatly increases the chances of developing skin cancer later in life. Because sun exposure in childhood and the teenage years can be so damaging, many other states are regulating the minors' use of tanning facilities like tanning beds. Currently, 24 states and 4 counties regulate tanning facilities for minors, and 6 states have introduced legislation in 2007, and Oregon is listed as one of those 6 states. A recent study in the International Journal of Cancer found that melanoma in people had a greater risk of developing cancer who first used sun tanning facilities in their teens and 20s. And these authors strongly suggested that restrictions to the use of sun tanning facilities to minors must occur. Also, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention concluded that avoiding the use of sun tanning facilities is an effective way to reduce exposure to UV radiation in their guidelines for school health programs prevention, preventing skin cancer among young people. I would like to consider amendments to this bill, and that will come later. After talking with the American Cancer Society, they strongly feel that it should be really prohibited for those under the age of 18, and they're going to be coming up to talk, so they may be making that suggestion. And I think that an alternative maybe could be that those between the ages of 16 and 18 or 15 and 18 with a parental consent, I know that California is considering an amendment where those between the ages of 16 and 18 with parental consent, but the parent has to be with them at the tanning facility. So those are the amendments that I'm considering. And so I thank you very much, and I look forward to having the American Cancer Society come up. Do you have any questions for me at this point?
Madam Chair.
Your chair. Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much. Thank you for waking me up, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Senator Gordley.
Senator Carter.
I just want to applaud you for this legislation. I really do think that when you look at minors and some of the things, because I have, my daughter has a little friend who is going to Tannen Booz already. She's 13. And we just have to help protect our children, even if sometimes it's hard for us as a society to try to mandate so many things. I think it's still a vital thing for us to do, and at least have the conversation come up so we can have, as a society, a constructive conversation around it. So thank you.
Thank you. Senator Courtney.
Thank you. Chair Gordley, thank you for bringing this bill, Senator Morris Anderson. Can I ask a question? I was going to ask the question that you anticipated, that is 14 as opposed to under 18. You can't drink until you're what age in the state of Oregon?
18.
Oh, 21.
Okay. And 21. I'm not trying to set anybody up here. I just
12.
I'm not trying to set anybody up, but we've made a policy decision as legislators. Alcohol is not what we want on our children up to 21. Smoking. Help me with smoking in terms of selling tobacco
18.
Products.
18.
It's 18. That's what I'm cool. saying is, if this stuff is as bad for a young person as your testimony, I'm sure, has said, as well as it can be confirmed, then it's up to you. I'll follow your lead. But if drinking and alcohol, we just said no, and tobacco, we've said no, then what I'm saying is it's conceivable we ought to do the same with this stuff.
Absolutely.
Because melanoma, that's a horrible way to die. That kind of cancer is horrible stuff. I know a little bit about cancer, and all I can tell you is that's not the kind of cancer you want to get, because that can take you out. And to get it, and so to the extent that we know as adults that this can hurt somebody, maybe that's something we should look at. Again, I'll take your lead, Chair. I always do. But when I think of drinking and I think of smoking, then that's all. So do you have any response to that, or do you feel or not?
Yeah, no. As I said, I do not want to work this today. I do want to entertain an amendment that actually prohibits sun tanning facilities to those under the age of 18. And I want to work with our caucus as well as to make sure that that will be agreeable to the majority of people in the Senate. The reason I chose, I pre-session filed this, mm-hmm. and I was not able to work as closely with the Cancer Society because they were very involved in some elections. And so what I did is I based this legislation on the legislation that is passed in the 14 other states, mm-hmm. and all of them had under the age of 15. Mm-hmm. None had it older. So I wanted to put it 18. In fact, my staff will know that that's what I wanted to submit it, but then I thought there must be some reason, and I didn't have a chance to research it. But I think the Cancer Society will be able to clarify a little bit better why we need to go to age 18. But I'm very open to that. I wanted that originally.
Thank you very much.
Senator, you may have said this, and I missed it as I was organizing myself. Do we know if the Department of Human Services and Public Health have looked at this issue and established any guidelines or? Okay, on the schedule. Great.
Are they on the?
They
yes, they're
okay.
on the list.
Okay, very good. That'll
okay.
take care of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if you'd call the next
Looks like Courtney Dresser. Courtney Dresser.
For the record, I'm Courtney Dresser. I'm with the American Cancer Society, and I'm the Government Relations Director here in Oregon. And I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 340. As the chair has said, skin cancer is one of the most common cancers that we have in the United States. When we do certain stats, when we say things like colon cancer is the third leading cause of cancer, found in the United States, we actually don't include skin cancer in those stats, because if we did, everything would be moved down a notch or two. There will be 1 million cases in 2007, according to our estimates, and about 8,000 deaths from skin cancer will occur in the United States this year alone. Melanoma, as you've heard, is the most serious form of the skin cancer. There are several key risk factors. Family history, so if there is any family history of melanoma, it's something to start looking at right away if you know there's any history. And the presence of moles on your skin, and we're always telling people to watch their moles, see if there's any changes. And also things like hair color, if you're blonde or fair-skinned or redhead, we've heard for years to watch yourselves if you're blonde or redhead. Another key risk is a person's history of excessive sun exposure, sunburn history, and the use of tanning beds. We are very clear in our prevention guidelines. Limit or avoid exposure to the sun during the midday hours, usually from about 10 to 4 p.m. If people are outdoors, we strongly suggest, and this is one of my favorite American Cancer Society programs, slip, slop, and slap. It's easy to remember. We teach it to children in our sun prevention programs. Slip on a shirt. Slap on sunscreen with SPF of 15 or higher, and slap on a hat. We also highly encourage people to avoid tanning beds and sun lamps. These just increase your exposure to UV rays, which is what is the known cause of skin cancer. Children are in particular need to be protected from the sun. Chair Monis Anderson mentioned a study that was done. They have looked at the history of people with melanoma, and people, especially young people, because this is one of the most common forms of cancer diagnosed in younger Americans, and their history, many of them had used tanning beds in their youth. We are supportive of this legislation. We do suggest some changes, as mentioned. I think the biggest reason to change it to 18 is because that's when you're considered an adult in most of the United States, and here in particular where we can vote, where you can buy tobacco products, and so we would strongly consider that. Mm-hmm. And also an amendment allowing physicians to prescribe access to tanning beds. There are some cases where that is used as a form of therapy for teens in certain issues. So we would also suggest that. I think one major thing is this is a policy that we're not going to see immediate results from. The skin cancer rates won't go down in Oregon immediately. This is something that won't happen long after you guys have all left this chamber where we'll actually see the results of this. So I thank you for taking the leadership on this, Senator Monis Anderson, and I encourage the committee to pass this out with a few amendments, hopefully.
You know, when I was talking to you yesterday, I called Courtney yesterday afternoon, and she was working on Sunday. Also, and I like the comment that you said that UV rays are a toxic element, carcinogen, just like tobacco products have carcinogens in them. And that's a good way to look at this. Yes, Senator Cruz.
Not that I'm questioning. I'm just curious because the chair said that most other states set it at 14. Do you have any idea why that date was where that age was special in all these other states?
Thank you.
I have not talked to my colleagues in other states. I think if we look at some of the other legislation, it does have 18, but it has some caveats for like the 16 to 18 year olds. So I think 14 and under is completely banned, and then there's some wiggle room for the older teens.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just curiosity as to why so many states would choose that, and if there was some logical reason for that, or if it was just a point in time that somebody picked and everybody followed.
Well, I think it in looking at the legislation that California is proposing, they're saying ban it under age 18, but those 16 to 18, if they bring a mother with them or a guardian or a father with them with an ID, and it has to be a certain kind of ID, passport or something to really prove that they're between 16 and 18, that with parental consent they could use the tanning booths.
Well, two things. Obviously, Katie King is jumping at the bits, and she's going to answer you guys' question when she gets up here.
But why don't we call Katie King from Department of Human Services now, too?
Okay. But the other thing,
who is it? Oh, it's Terry. Terry Lindsay.
Yeah, but the oh, sorry.
That's okay.
But I think... Excuse me. But the other thing is that I want to strongly let you know, I'm even willing to lobby for you at age 18. And if we're forced to at some point because of lack of support, then parental consent. Mm-hmm. But I agree with the senator from Kaiser that we have these other things in place that help to protect our children. When you're talking about carcinogens that that have a strong cancer factor along those lines, I think if we can look at 18 for other things for our young people, that this is a protective measure too. I will strongly support you on going to 18.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes.
And I just want to say to the committee that I will make those calls to my colleagues in other states and find out how their laws developed and more importantly, how they're looking at, too. So we have
Madam Chair, I wasn't necessarily opposing the amendment. I was just wondering why it has taken place this way in so many other states.
Thank you.
Chairman Anderson, members of the committee, perhaps I can answer some of the background on that. I think the first
introduce yourself first for the record.
Okay. My name is Terry Lindsay. I'm manager of the Radiation Protection Services Program in Oregon, and that's in the Office of Environmental Public Health, Public Health Division. And in terms of this particular background on minors, I think the first legislation and the first rules that we adopted were based on the definition of minor. And so it was children under the age of 18. Since that time, there's a number of states that have taken action to look at the most vulnerable population in terms of for exposure to UV. And of course, the earlier you get exposure, the blistering type exposures and that type of thing that burns, the longer term you have for developing skin cancer. And so it is age dependent. The earlier the exposure occurs, the more prevalent you're going to have skin cancer sometime in your life. And I think that's where the emphasis has come, is take a look at the children that are minors of a younger age to take care of them first. And as was already discussed, California is considering legislation to move it from 14 to 16, and I think you maybe talked about even to 18. The National Conference of State Legislatures has also given a guidance on this for a number of states, and they're tracking this legislation very carefully across the country as a national healthcare initiative. So I think that part is well supported across the country in terms of the younger the exposure occurs, it's better to ban it at the earlier age and then have parental consent in between. I would like to go into my main testimony, and then I'll be happy to answer questions afterwards if I can. Chairwoman Anderson and members of the committee, my name is Terry Lindsay. I am responsible in the radiation program for not only a tanning program, but also radioactive materials licensing and inspection, X-ray registration and inspection, radiological emergency preparedness and response, environmental radiation monitoring, and radon. And I'm here today to speak to you in support of Senate Bill 340, and we in concerning the use of tanning beds by minors. It helps to lower the risk of developing skin cancer. This bill provides protection of minors by prohibiting under 14 or 14 and under, and also has civil penalty provisions which are already in our statute. It also decreases tanning facility owner liability in terms of where the burns occur and where we have them reported a lot of times are in the teenage years. So it would help to lower their liability as an owner operator. It also helps to, especially important, children's health by prevention of early skin cancer development. This healthcare initiative is supported by dermatologists worldwide. It helps to protect children from ultraviolet exposure that leads to this early skin cancer development. It also supports our current legislation and complements the existing tanning facility rule provisions concerning minors. Currently, the rules require that anyone under the age of 18 have written consent from their parents in order to use sun tanning facilities. Also, it has the support of the Oregon Dermatology Society. They sponsored the original legislation in 1991 under House Bill 3088, and in this, they developed the regulatory authority over the tanning industry in Oregon. And similar legislation, as has been said, has been passed in a number of other states that are looking at the exposure to minors and to help lower the incidence of skin cancer in other states. There's also some statistics here that I've provided. This comes from the Centers for Disease Control National Health Initiative interview survey dated 2005. And in this document, it says in 2005, 8.7% of teens aged 14 to 17 used indoor tanning devices. Girls were seven times more likely to use these devices than boys in the same group. The World Health Organization also recommends that no person age 18 or under use a tanning bed because of the associated risk for skin cancer. ORS 431-935 currently exempts the use of phototherapy devices for treatment of certain skin conditions under the direct supervision of a licensed physician. This question came up earlier, whether or not they could continue to, dermatologists could continue to use this therapy, and it is already provided for in the current statutory authority. The Public Health Division recommends support of this important legislation to promote children's health and prevent future skin cancers. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill, and I'd also like to thank Senator Mullins Anderson for sponsoring this legislation.
Thank you. So you're saying when we draft the amendments that we do not need to exempt the phototherapy devices for treatment of skin conditions?
Senator Mullins Anderson and committee members, that is true.
Okay.
It is already provided for in the current statute.
Nor the consent for the doctor under this special things that you said here. We don't have to do that either.
Chair Mullins Anderson and Senator Carter. Senator Carter,
yes, sir.
This is already provided for in the current legislation.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Do you currently, through rule, have the ability to assess civil penalties?
Senator Cruz, Chair Mullins Anderson, yes, we do have.
Okay.
And I think it's $300 is the maximums on there. It's $500. It is $500.
For violation?
For a violation, right. It's already built into the statute. There are some problems with the original crafting of that, but it has to do with definitions, and I think we've proposed a correction for that in another piece of legislation.
Follow up?
Yes.
I'm just getting at the ability to enforce this. Can you do it with your current FTE?
We do have on another Senator Cruz, Chair Mons Anderson. We do have another bill that we're testifying for related to the funding for the tanning fees, and we're requesting a fee increase to add a half of FTE for an inspector. So we're behind in terms of that. We're behind about 125 facility inspections in the tanning industry.
Follow up again. So the your tanning inspectors are not the folks who do your other inspections?
Senator Cruz, that is correct.
Okay, because I was wondering for smaller communities like mine where there's probably, gosh, I would hate to guess how many tanning beds, but not that many, but you have people already going in there to do the inspections of the other facilities if you're double-tracking people to get there.
Chair Mons Anderson, Senator Cruz, this is correct. Right now, we are in the process of cross-training all of our inspectors and to improve the efficiency of that. Because we are backlogged, we're trying to address it internally so that we'll have some cost savings on travel. And all of the inspectors for X-ray, radioactive materials, and for tanning will receive cross-training in this. So they'll be available in those communities very shortly.
But Madam Chair, that's a beautiful thing.
The one thing that I think is so important for all of us to know, and it's back to, Madam Chair, a point that you made, or either, I think, the Cancer Society, that none of us sitting here today will probably be on the cutting edge of the changes that will take place for this. KOPB this morning was talking about kids and tobacco, and they're saying that no matter how many inspectors, and they had kids, you know, that would go in, and they really love being I Spy and going in and trying to buy cigarettes. And they said that until the attitudes of people who are in charge change, that people will continue to try to sell, you know, tobacco. Because no matter how many inspections, it's the kids themselves that work undercover that really have changed the attitudes of adults. And so I think that you're right, but I think we have to start someplace. And having inspectors, just having the thought of having inspectors doing this, going to eventually get the message out to people that change is necessary in order to protect our children.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you very much. I'm looking at this handout that you provided from the Center for Disease Control. I think it's part of your testimony.
Senator Gordon, that's correct.
And there's a statement here that says the CDC recommends that school programs to prevent skin cancer advise students to avoid using sun lamps and tanning beds. And so I'm wondering, do we know how many programs there are out there in our schools around the state focused on education? How many programs are there, and what's needed? What's needed in the way of education?
Chair Mons Anderson, Senator Gordley, I am not aware of the individual programs within the schools. It may be part of some of the environmental programs individually in school districts, where they're concerned about lots of issues and they teach curriculum in that area. But as far as I know, there's not any statewide initiative in terms of this. There are guidelines from the Centers for Disease Control in regard to school programs to prevent skin cancer. I did research some of those, and there are some very excellent guides in terms of helping administrators and teachers to actually promote skin cancer awareness and improve conditions in terms of that.
Senator Gordley, being on the school board, we followed the guidelines that the schools have, and I think it's really up to the individual health teachers on what they take out of those guidelines and teach to those students. So if there's a teacher that has a passion for that, their kids are really going to get that in their schools. So this might be something that we need to share with the schools.
Mm-hmm. Senator? I would say that we do need to look at how we systematically deliver this kind of information that's focused on prevention, and it's another aspect of health and well-being. So some kind of systematic, organized approach to delivering the information is something I hope we'll think about, and the partnerships that could help deliver the information is also something to think about.
All right, Senator Courtney.
Yeah. Is carcinoma, am I saying it right, that form of cancer, skin cancer, what do you call it?
Senator Courtney, Chair Monsanderson, in terms of the name of it, it's basal cell carcinoma.
Okay.
It's the first level.
Okay, let me ask you this.
That can lead to the...
This tanning booth can create that too?
Senator Courtney, that is correct. Any exposure to UV that's significant can lead to
that. Does everybody here know what that stuff is? Because every year, twice a year I have to go in and they burn the daylights out of me. I mean, I always feel embarrassed coming back here, like, what's going on with Courtney's all broken out? Because then if he burns me up, they blister and they scab up. My wife has had to actually have surgery on her nose because it dug down very deeply. So even though it doesn't kill you, it's discomforting. Because they got to take it off and they have to surgically remove it as well. So that is as much, and to young people who are trying to look pretty and beautiful, they just need to know. And I don't know whether they start doing that when they're young or not, start burning it off with the hydrant, whatever the gun is that he's using on me, or the surgery. But that can be somewhat disfiguring if they have to do the surgery. And who cares what I look like, but at least for a period of time, people say, what is wrong with you, Courtney? What is all that in your head and everything? It's because of this basal cell carcinoma, not because I never did any tanning, but I was out there messing with Mother Nature and her son. So I wanted to make sure you understood that while you don't, melanoma kills you, but there's still other forms of stuff that can disfigure, at least in terms of surgery or this gun, and young people, we're trying to protect them from that experience as well. So maybe that's the given, and you all know about basal cell, but I've experienced it, and I have a son who's experiencing it, and my wife has experienced it. So for what it's worth.
Thank you. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While we got the expert here, this just popped into my head, and I don't know. You know, you can also buy products you can put on that give you instant tan. Mm-hmm. Are those bad things?
Senator Cruz, as far as I know, it would be based on the chemistry. I don't know the chemistry of this product.
I read some articles on that, Senator Cruz, and the FDA does not control those, and there are some articles here that are sort of scary, and they really are not recommending the use of those because they're not FDA approved, and so that's another issue which needs to be addressed, but more on a federal level than here, because I was wondering if we could address that, but we couldn't.
Okay, well, I mean, Madam Chair, I'm just curious because I mean, it's the same result, and I mean, personally, I've never had problem getting enough sun being a farmer, but I've always thought tanning beds were the height of hubris.
All right. Any other questions? All right. We're not going to go into work session because I truly want to get the amendments in. And Courtney, please, can we meet so we can get that drafted right away? And I want to make sure that's correct. And all right, thank you. And I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 340. And I'd like to open a public hearing on SJR 9. And I would like to call Senator Peter Courtney to the back.
You don't have to actually do it.
Oh, I always forget this. Yes, would our administrator please read the bill?
SJR 9 declares the month of March and each year as Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month.
Can I ask a question?
Yes. I don't know if I should have it. Okay. Senator Courtney.
Thank you, Chairman Monsanderson and members of the Health Policy and Public Affairs Committee. You have before you SJR 9, and I am here, Peter Courtney, State Senator from District 11, as well as residing at 2925 Island View Drive, north here in Salem, 97303, not Kaiser. that I'm very much in support of this resolution. And you have my written testimony. I believe others from the American Cancer Society will also testify. It's interesting, this colorectal cancer, 145,000 Americans will be diagnosed with it in 2007, they estimate. Now, and about 55,000 Americans will die from colorectal cancer. It's the third greatest killer, most common type of cancer there is in this country. The tragedy is, if it is detected early, you got a 90% chance of beating colorectal cancer if you get it. And I can talk to you extensively about that. The 5-year survival rate, as I said, is 90%. The 5-year is, of course, you have to be tested every 6 months after it's been detected and procedures have been taken, which I can describe to you too, to get rid of it or control it. And then after 5 years, if they don't find any more evidence of the in this lymph nodes around the colon, then basically they say you're cured, if you can ever be cured from cancer. However, if it has moved deep into the muscle wall, you got serious trouble, because it's near vital organs and it's near bone structures, and the medical community then will tell you they're going to go crazy, do everything they can, but you're up against it. And very well, you may get that day in a office of an oncologist in which they tell you that you're terminal, that you've only got so long to live. And then the tragedy is, if when they first did that sound waves in your colon, because that's the technique they use to find out how deep it is, if it could have been found earlier, you could have easily, I won't say easily, because there is a process you have to go through to get rid of colorectal cancer, but at least you'll survive and go on to live. I'm not going to read more than this. I've testified extensively on colon cancer last session when we decided to make insurance companies cover the test of the situation with the colon examination. I must tell you, the reason we need a resolution is it doesn't do us any good to talk about colon rectal cancer in this chamber and to do things if the public doesn't know about it. This thing is prevalent. This stuff will get inside a lot of us, regardless of whether it was in our families or not. And I will just tell you, and I beg some of my fellow senators, and they won't listen to me, although they're coming to me, the test is not difficult or discomforting if you know where to get it. We don't like to talk about the colon, but the fact is the most sensitive organ in the body is the colon. If you want to know what kind of life you're living, your colon will tell you instantly. And as tasteful as it is, probably one of the most invasive tests medical science has, but the most accurate of all tests to examine what our body's going on, is the famous colonoscopy, whatever you call it. And it literally tells you what every single centimeter is going on inside. And the beauty of that test, if you'll take it, especially if you're 50 and older, is that they can snip out pollens with the test. You don't have to do surgery. But if the pollen has become a tumor, then all hell breaks loose. Because then you are going to get into radiation, you're going to get into chemo, and you are going to get into radical surgery. And you may have to wear a colonoscopy something the rest of your life, which is famously referred to as a bag. It's not necessarily temporary in all cases. Sometimes it's permanent, depending upon where they take that polyp, which has turned into a tumor, is, and how much work they have to do. All that can be avoided. All of it. Not to mention the cost, the trauma of it, if one will simply take this test and become aware that the colon, for every human being, must be examined at some time in their life, regardless of the history in their family. If they do not, they are putting themselves in incredible harm's way. And I'll just tell you that. And so, this resolution, while it says we're going to declare this month of March, I just wish that in some ways we would somehow or other make all Americans and all people realize the colon has got to be examined. Let's make all the jokes, let's have all the fun about it, but you've got to get in there and look at what's going on. And I don't mean just the first 18 inches, which is the sigmoid, and the barium test. I know all about them. I've done them all. I mean, I want every inch of it examined by the test that's called. I'm sure the good nurse can tell you. And it can be administered today with no pain and no discomfort. So, great resolution. Hope you'll pass it. It's timely. It's needed. We did a remarkable thing last session. And let's continue to lower this death rate and make sure someone gets it early, becomes aware of it early enough that they don't have to go through the hell of trying to deal with colon cancer.
I think, President Courtney, I think there were some people saying, why do it now? Why don't we wait to hear this in March? And the decision was made because we will pass it now, but we will start talking about or having bills on the floor in March, and so this was apropos to get this out of the hopper and into the queue so that we will be hearing this in March, which will then hopefully we'll have a big media blitz on designating the month of March as colorectal cancer awareness month.
Yeah, to speak to that, I'll just tell you, it's a few blocks from here. It's one of the leading oncologists in the entire Northwest. It's not the West Coast, William Bud Pierce. I will bet you this morning in his office, because of certain symptoms, he is telling individuals, you need this test because you probably are facing colon cancer. So what I'm telling you is, this hearing, if it gets reported in the press, whatever, it's called education. Any way we can do that, we should be doing that for each and every one of us. I'm looking at people up here. I'm not going to get personal with you in your lives, but I'm aware of some of your ages. And I'm just telling you that...
You talking to me, Senator?
That, well, yeah, I am. to whatever extent we as public policymakers can make our people, our constituents, our loved ones aware that life has its... difficulties, or it has its medical examinations, and this is one of them that we got to talk about. And the more we talk about it, then it'll become an everyday life situation, and we'll be fine. So, yeah, we were asked to delay it, but that's okay. The House is also considering this. I think we'll probably get it passed. I feel good about it. I feel good about last session. Last session stunned me. I never thought we'd pass that bill. I'm still wondering how that ever happened, but it happened. And I'm grateful.
Questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Carter.
But I'm glad to see, in all due seriousness, Senator, you are taking leadership on this, because in African American society, it is high, and especially among African American males. My colleague at the community college has a 27-year-old son who's just gone through... a radical in terms of this. And so it's really, really important. And I will, in March, invite you up to be with some of our people in maybe having some kind of colorectal fair or something of that nature. Because you as a man being able to speak to this issue, I think, would help other men who have problems with going to take the test and making fun of it.
Thank you, Chair Emanuel and Senator Carter. By the way, you probably know, at least in the draft form, I don't have the actual bill. It says, whereas African Americans have a higher rate of colorectal cancer incidence than do Caucasians. And then there's also a reference that males have a higher than women. Don't take that. Women is so you don't need a test, because it strikes women too, and it'll do the same thing to you that it does to the men. Trust me. And so it's there. But you brought it up, and it's in here. It's specifically referred to the African American situation, as well as the male situation. So, pay me now, pay me later. It's something we need to do, and as I say, thankfully, medical science literally has an extraordinary examination. I can't think of, I'm sure the good nurse can tell you, another medical test that can be is as invasive and can do as much when it is there inside you as this one. Because I think you can examine other parts of the body, but it can't take out things while it's actually the test is going on. This is the polyp remover. You want to get the polyps. You don't want to find a tumor, or you're going to start crying, and you're going to start going crazy. Because then there's a process of weeks of they say ultrasounds and everything, because they got to find out how deep that thing is, and then comes the diagnosis that, well, chemo, radiation, and then surgery. And I don't think it's possible to have a surgery in the colon, I'm just going to say that, without wearing a bag some period of time. Now, I may be wrong, Nurse Mona Sanderson, but if you're going to go in and take portions of the colon out or deal with it, you're going to have to wear a bag some period of time, and you may have to wear, and I'm not being trying to be crude with you, you're going to maybe have to wear it the rest of your life. So that's another inconvenience. You saved your life, maybe, but the fact is, it's a life-changing experience. So all that's part of this discussion, as well as uncomfortable as you may, I can tell, have me talk about it. I'm sorry about that. I'm not trying to make you uncomfortable. I'm just saying we can save a lot of people's lives, a lot of hell, if we can get them to take this test and be aware of this. So I've ran and raved enough, Chair Monsanto. I'm sorry if I have, but...
That's okay. All right. You're going to speak?
He's my L.A.
Okay.
He basically wrote the testimony. I always like to bring along those that really do the work. You know, I think we all take
That's
this.
That's right.
We love to say that it's me. The truth is, we're only as good as the staff. You know, I've always...
Well, you have a lot more staff than I do, so I had to write my own.
Well, so we're glad you recognized that. We're glad you recognized it.
All right. Thank you. Courtney Dresser.
Thank you, Ms. President.
It's always, hello, I'm Courtney Dresser from the American Cancer Society. It's always difficult to follow Senate President Courtney, especially about this issue. I've been doing it for a couple sessions now. We should start a little road show. You can dress up as Pollock Man. Or I can. Everything that the senator said is all very true, and I think one of the things about my written testimony is in the folders that I gave you. I think things that just to reiterate a couple of things. One, this is one of the most preventable cancers. There's only a few cancers out there that we can actually find and get rid of before they actually become cancer. Things like a Pap test and cervical cancer do those type of things, and a colonoscopy and fighting and removing polyps is something else that we can actually stop the cancer before it even happens. Our goal at the American Society is just to educate as many people as possible about those screening guidelines. The guidelines are now in Oregon statute and covered by insurance, and we want to just make sure people are aware of those issues, aware of the guidelines, and if they do nothing but remind 90 people in this building to do something or to check their colons, or to ask their mothers and fathers if they've done that lately, then we've done a good thing. So we are, again, like I think Senator Mona Sanderson said, we are working with a House resolution and some House members, and we're hoping to have kind of a day of action in March to get as much play as we can off of this resolution to educate as many people as we can in Oregon, and the Cancer Society will continue to do that. And I would like to, on the record, thank Senate President Courtney not only for getting this bill resolution drafted for us, but also for all of his leadership. We would not have the law that we do in the state without his leadership, and I thank you for that, as does the American Cancer Society.
Great. And it would be nice for you to contact the Senate President's office as well as the Speaker of the House's office to make sure that if they're having it on the floor, we can sort of coordinate it and have it on the same day. Yeah.
We would love to see that happen.
All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much. I would just like to offer that I know that the African American Health Coalition based in Portland will be very pleased to see this resolution, and I know that they will be very appreciative of the Senate President's leadership as well. The African American Health Coalition exists in part to educate about health disparities affecting the African-American population in Oregon, but also to educate and educate around preventive measures that people can take to protect their health. And so I would ask that we reach out to the African-American Health Coalition and invite them in to participate in any public activities that will be taking place during the month of March. I think it's just an excellent partnering opportunity.
That's an excellent idea.
I agree. We'll do that.
All right. Any other comments, questions? Okay. I'd like to close a public hearing on SJR 9, and I'd like to open a work session on SJR 9. Is there any discussion? I see none. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Madam Chair, I move
SJR 9
to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves SJR 9 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Those who want to vote aye will say aye. Those opposed will vote nay. Will the clerk call the roll?
Chair Mona Sanderson.
Aye.
Senator Gordley. Aye.
Senator Carter.
Aye.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
Aye.
All right, the SJR 9, having received the required majority, is declared passed.
Carrier.
Okay, and I would like Senator Courtney to carry this, please. All righty. I now like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 229, and would you please describe the bill?
Senate Bill 229 authorizes the State Board of Psychologist Examiners to order psychological, physical, and psychiatric assessments of the licensees.
And we have Deborah Orman from the Board of Psychological Examiners. Is that correct?
Psychologist Examiners.
Psychologist Examiners.
That's right.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Deborah Orman. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Psychologist Examiners. The Board of Psychologist Examiners screens for ethical and competent practice of psychology in Oregon through monitoring continuing education, as well as investigating complaints, providing discipline, and testing psychologists. We also investigate and level civil penalties against those who practice without a license. This particular bill is more or less just a technical, excuse me, that's the next one. I went off on the wrong tangent here. This particular bill is, as the administrator said, to give us the ability to order a psychological evaluation or a drug and alcohol evaluation or a medical examination of either an applicant for licensure or a licensee whom is under investigation. And that's something that's of question there, fitness to practice. And it's most of the other licensing boards have this ability, and for whatever reason, we were never given that authority, so we're seeking it now. It's a tool that we feel like would be very useful to us as part of our investigation and discipline process.
Thank you. The reason I didn't put a work session on this, because I thought that there might be some opposition. Do you know of any opposition from...
No, I've checked with our professional organization, which is the Oregon Psychological Association, which is a statewide organization, and talk with their board chair as well as their executive director. And my understanding from that group is that they don't have opposition to it at all.
I'm not your opposition.
Yeah.
Good morning, Chair Monis Anderson. I'm Betsy Earls, and I represent the Oregon Psychological Association this session. And Ms. Orman is correct. Our association does not have any objection to this legislation at all. In fact, we worked with the OBPE during the interim to make sure that we were fine with this.
Great. Yes, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, the way this is written, the board can order a psychologist to submit. Does a psychologist have any recourse on the front end, or he's in the process and that's it?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Cruz, in terms of an applicant or...
Okay, so notwithstanding, may at any time direct and order a licensed psychologist to submit to one of these exam assessments. And I guess I'm wondering, obviously this is probably complaint-driven. I'm just kind of curious as the process the board would use to get to the point where they're ordering this assessment, and what remedy does the psychologist have at that point?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Cruz, there would be two points at which one of these evaluations might be ordered. One would be during the application process. If we received reference information or other information in application that caused us concern, the board would open a complaint on their own initiative, and as part of the investigation process might order an evaluation. Again, if there was question about the applicant's fitness to practice, they would have the same rights object to that and go through a contested case hearing and be represented by attorney, et cetera. The second point in which this might happen is if we had a current licensee who either a citizen brought a complaint or, the board on its own initiative might bring a complaint against a licensee, and this would be part of an investigation. And it would just be an investigation tool to provide a more complete investigation. And, again, that licensee would have the right for a contested case hearing.
Okay, thank you.
Right. Yes, Senator Carter.
I am absolutely shocked that we don't have something in statute about this before now. Any deliverer of health services or working with the public, for the board to not have had this before now, I am shocked that some of us had not looked at this, because it certainly is a danger. You have judicial fitness for judges and for other people in the legal field. You have the Board of Medical Examiners, and that's why I'm so shocked about this, that it's not, that psychologists were not a part of that piece. And so you certainly do need this tool. And it's really something that is designed to protect the public. And so it's a good consumer bill. It's great.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other further comments? I'd like to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 229, and I'm telling Shannon that we'll get it for work session as soon as possible. All right, I'd like to open as close. I closed that one, and I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 230. And we have
Deborah Orman.
She looks familiar.
I think so.
Here's Senate Bill 230. All right. Yes, Deborah Orman is the only one signed up for it, so this must be a straightforward one also. Go ahead.
Chair Monica Sanderson, members of the committee. My name is Deborah Orman. For the record, I am the Executive Director of the Board of Psychologist Examiners, and this particular bill is technical correction. I believe last session the Pain Management Commission had legislation to order all of the all the health professions to take pain management continuing education. There was sort of an inadvertent effect on our law, saying that if somebody did not take this continuing education of 7 units, that we could not license them, when in fact that isn't what they intended. They intended everyone to have this training and this education. However, still, as keep our authority to license somebody, maybe pending them taking this education. The way the law reads now is we cannot license somebody until they take this pain management education. That was an unintended implication in the law. It's a technical correction of language.
Okay. Any opposition that we know of? The Pain Management Commission did not come forward. Yes, Senator Gordon.
Yeah, just a question. Does this affect any of the other health licensing?
Chair Monica Anderson, Senator Gordley. No. They have already, this particular, what I'm here about today, is only for my agency. The other agencies have already had this corrected.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 230, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 230. Senator Gordley.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 230 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 230 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Those are the opinion. First, is there any discussion? Seeing none, those are the yes.
I do have a comment about health licensing boards in general. This seems to be the place to make the comment. In my experience in the legislature, the health licensing boards have been assigned to the Ways and Means Education Subcommittee. And I've wondered over the years and have questioned that assignment, as opposed to having the health licensing boards in a committee that's focused on health and looking at the policy aspects of the health licensing boards. Again, understanding that we do need to look at the fee-driven revenue collecting piece of the of those boards, and that being the reason for their assignment to a Ways and Means Committee. But I think that this is an opportunity for us in this session to look at how those boards are, how and where those boards are assigned. And again, when you look at the range, it's the nursing, it's the Board of Medical Examiners, it's the psychologist, it's the all the rest of them, 14 or so different health licensing boards that seem to me need to be in a committee like this. Mm-hmm. So that's just for the good of the order, and I'm ready to move on and support this.
Just to follow up on that point, that includes scope of practice issues also, and I'm working on legislation regarding that very issue and trying to get scope of practice and maybe once we get that taken care of, we can start taking, seeing the boards more, seeing legislation in the health policy committees. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Senator Carter.
Will you be doing scope of practice in this committee?
Hope so.
Jesus, I thought I'd never see another scope of practice bill in my life. But I want to say to Senator Gordley, when I first came to the legislature, all of the health boards used to come through health committee.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Senator Cruz?
Madam Chair, in fact, when I was in the House and chairing the committee, we messed with it a couple times trying to create, at one point, a super board. And basically looking at all these small boards and their jurisdictions and the administrative and investigative functions, and we did some combination of some in a minor way. We never did get around to a super board because the BME and the Board of Nursing really didn't want to be under anybody else's jurisdiction, obviously. Okay. So but it has been an issue that has been dealt with, as well as scope of practice, and substantive committees are the appropriate place for those discussions. I agree with you, Senator Gordley.
All right. Well, any other discussion? If not, those who vote aye will vote. Those who are of the opinion that this should pass will vote aye. Those opposed will say no. The clerk, please call the roll.
Chair Monizanderson. Aye. Senator
Gordley. Aye.
Senator Carter.
Aye.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
Aye.
All right, having received the required majority, the Senate Bill 230 is considered passed, and I'm going to start with Senator Gordley. Would you mind carrying this bill?
Happy to.
All right. All right, I would like to open, I close the work session on Senate Bill 230 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 387. Hey! Everybody.
Again?
I thought that was gone.
It's not off of my. Sorry. All righty.
You better close it.
Now, just to. Yes, I think I better close the public hearing on Senate Bill 387. I was looking at the wrong agenda. All right. We will be having a meeting on Wednesday at 8:30, but just as a reminder, Friday morning is going to be at Mount Hood Community College at 10 o'clock. And directions will be given. If you're unable to go, please let the administrator know, because we will have to cancel it if we do not have a quorum. I don't want to go there with just
remembering the green.
No, the only one I don't know.
He wasn't here when you asked if people come.
Do you know if you'll be able to go?
I'm going.
Oh, you're going. So we will have a quorum then. All right. Thank you. Any further business? Meeting adjourned.